talk.
He needs company anyway.
Yes, yeah. Come join me.
Yeah.
He was here.
He's going out more than in.
He's also going to see the bus off, so there's a bunch of people down there.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So there might be some late cars.
That's fine. That's fine. Okay, so I'll go. Connie shut the door. I think that means we're official now. Okay, so those that just walked in, just so you can see where Oman is in the world, that is where we are located. And most people were not here last time, it seems, so I'm going to just do a little bit of recap. Okay, and that's not a problem. This is Sultan bin Qaboos Said. He is the Sultan right now, and he's been in power for about 40 years. He overthrew his father in the early 70s. It was a peaceful overthrow. He had been off, went to school in the UK, and realized what the world was like and came back and said, "Dad, I'm going to do it my way." And that is when Oman began to grow. Until he took over, there were about 15 miles of paved road. Only a certain area had electricity, and most of it belonged to the Sultan and his immediates. And this is the palace. It was built in the 70s, you can tell. This is the area that would have had electricity and the area that would have been the most developed before everybody calls him HM, His Majesty. So before HM took over, this area right here would have been the only road, and some of these darker buildings would have been the only buildings that existed. And this is one of the main ports that all the boats and everything come into. This is the main port now that all of the tourists and all of the big cruise ships come into. This is what it looks like during the day. So very, very heavily populated now. One thing I didn't mention last time is that he put a cap on how many levels how high you can build a building. And 6 floors is as high as you can go. I think that was probably about 5. You think everything is low, and he didn't want that. And then in comparison to that, this would be farther away from Muscat down, and an area that would be less developed as far as that kind of commercialism that you saw. This is a fishing village. They do have electricity. Most of these are really pretty new. I would say within the last 30 years, these homes were built. There's not much in there that's very old. And then there were places like this out more, and this is what I was talking about, the mountains, very extreme. Yes?
Well, just when I first saw this couple pictures again, and I saw the slides, I had this kind of vision of Monaco. It looks really beautiful, lit up. It occurred to me, is there a kind of a nightlife or a cafe life or anything? That's what it looks like.
Yes, and that's very traditional of most Arabic cultures. They are very night. Their cultures are very night driven because it's cooler. So yes, they're up late. They don't eat dinner until 8, 9 at night. So it's that same kind of that kind of time frame that you would get the whole idea of the break. There's that siesta time, as you would call it, during the day, from about 1 to 4. So these are just some images real quickly of and this is the other region I was talking about down at the bottom. So it's not all desert by any means.
It's very much very agricultural, a lot of diversity in the geology of the area. So these are farms. They grow them up the side of the mountains. And these are what they call wadis when the rains come in. And there's the main desert, which is Wahiba Sands, that runs from Saudi out to the sea. So there's some geology there for you. And now I'm going to go to... Okay. This is a Bedouin woman. They are the traditional people that live in the desert. I was telling them she has a degree from Oxford. Their women are very well educated, and we'll get more into that, but I just wanted to show a couple of pictures for those of you that didn't see these last time. Group of Omani girls, that's my daughter in the back. Today she turns 26.
Oh, she looks like you.
She doesn't, because I didn't give birth to her. But that could be a really good nature-nurture conversation, right? These are all different Omani women also, and Oman used to occupy Zanzibar for quite a few, I guess like 100 plus years, and so when the people that are darker like this are most likely from that. She's Ethiopian, and then the other gal is, but she is an Omani citizen.
Is that typical dress?
That is, this is probably the most typical that you see as far as how women dress kind of commonly. This is probably either an elaborate celebration, I didn't take this picture, or a wedding. And I'm going to talk a little bit about their crafts. This is very contemporary because she's wearing gold. Keep that in mind when I show you some of these other things. This is in the desert. It's very hot. So they're going to be more and more wrapped up. It seems very odd to think, desert, I'm going to put more clothes on. It is so much cooler. And they really don't wear black if you look and see here. They wear, out in the desert there, they are more of the traditional women, and they wear layers of lots of bright colors. Omanis love to be brightly colored. And then this one's a good one. See how thin it is? Mm-hmm. Most of the cottons are very, very thin like that. And then I was showing, and we'll keep going. Then there's also the more... The women that are more educated, they take the same dress and put it into fashion and style. She works for Oman Air, very well educated. I was saying she probably speaks 5 languages fluently and can probably serve people on the airplane for about up to 10 different languages. Mm-hmm. When they're in the tourist trades of any kind, this would be considered that. They have to go to school for 3 years and then they have to learn those 5 original languages. Two of them they already obviously speak. They learn English starting in the first grade, and they obviously know Arabic. There are a lot of Indians in Oman, so they probably know 2 or 3 different Indian dialects. They would also know there's a lot of Germans that come often to where it's warm into the tourists, so they would most likely know German. And so it's I'm just gonna go right here over this way. So sorry, I just got my new software updated, and so we're learning a little bit here. Okay. So a lot of questions that were asked last time of me afterwards were what do women do that are traditional to Oman still within the culture and trade? And one is definitely weaving. And this is up in the mountains, and you can see they don't all wear black all the time. What she's spinning is probably goat hair, and the women are traditionally the goat herders in Oman. You'll see men once in a while, but mostly it's the women that herd the goats. And this will show you that how they used to weave. This is set up for tourists nowadays. So when we go out and we see the Bedouins and we go to their tents and stuff, so she's weaving that way. And then this is, you know, more contemporary weaving. One thing about the black in Oman, just you do see quite a bit of it the more that you get into the city. It's not a requirement, it's a choice. But it's a fashion, actually, statement in Oman. It's the kind of, if I'm wearing black, I'm a more modern woman, I'm a more educated woman, I'm not wearing the clothing of the villagers. So it is.
They all look alike, you know what I mean?
The hijabs?
Oh, these.
Yeah, this is a hijab. Mm-hmm. I guess, you know. Right? Black.
New York City, they all wear the sophisticated women.
And you know, it's very true. New York, San Francisco, Chicago, all the big cities, the women are going to wear black. It's everything goes with black. But again, you can see how colorful they are too, and you can see the layers again. And she's doing palm weaving, and this is the start of some basket weaving that she would do. You can also see, I don't think this one is sewn, I think this is a contemporary print, but they do a lot of tapestries and embroidery. And then the silver work. Silver is one of the other industries in Oman that is very big export, so that they make quite a bit of money on it. They have one of the finest silvers in the world, which I didn't know until I went there. It's very, very fine, it's very soft. These are old traditional pieces here. The coffee pots here that they make, these are incense burners. And this is the, again, for probably a wedding, a celebration. They love jewelry, lots of jewelry. A contemporary piece by a woman artist in Oman now. And there's kind of another view. They're training the younger more and more to take over what was the tradition of the elders. He's been making silver khan jars, these are called. That's the traditional knife they wear, and it hooks, and you really wouldn't want to be hit by one, I don't think. Dates. Some of the finest dates in the world, so they say, come from Oman. And you can see that there's three or four companies that do these really fancy dates and package them and send them out. I still like the ones from California, but but they are grand. And this is how Omanis would greet you, with dates and coffee and a lot of the Arab world. And you would never turn them down. It would just be very awful. Yes?
I have to ask, is she climbing up that?
It's a man. And he has a rope. Yeah, and please interrupt me with questions. I appreciate it to do that. This is his rope. It goes up just like we climb a tree. I don't know if you've ever seen. And then he uses, these are the palm fronds that have been cut off as the tree grows up. And then those are the date bunches, and they pick them sometimes when they're that green, especially if they're going to go to a factory like this, and then they'll ripen off the tree. Other times, if you're just walking around Oman, you'll see them.
This date must be just really tough.
Yeah, I would think so. And then another one that is very, very popular to Oman is the frankincense. And they're the frankincense trail is down in the lower half of Oman, just above Yemen. And Oman is the only place that you can get the teardrop frankincense. It's their tree and only their tree. Yes.
Oh, is that pitch?
Yes. Yeah. So they would, they to harvest it. If they wanted to harvest a lot of it, they would score the tree. But the trees naturally do bleed in a cycle, and to get the teardrop, you would never. You can't get the teardrop by harvesting it. You have to wait. Usually, for these size, then this is huge. Probably 10 years or something like that.
So yeah. They would own the tree?
Ownership is a very curious thing that I don't completely understand, because obviously you don't own the desert, you don't own these trees, but if you set up a factory or something and nobody disputes it, then you can continually stay there, and I guess it eventually becomes yours because you can pass it on through the generations and such. So,
is it called the frankincense tree?
Yes. Yeah, it's a frankincense tree. And they have turned it into just a booming business, you can see. And the woman that set up this, it is a woman that owns this company. And the Najd is the area down in which these trees grow. So Oman has a lot of smaller industries that really build and fulfill their economy. Another one is I love that picture. There are no lakes like that in Oman.
That's Minnesota.
That's Minnesota. Perfume and the chemistry of perfume, and I have Homage is an Omani company, and it's one of the most expensive perfumes in the world, I've learned. They love to smell good, and they use a lot of it. And they supply the base chemicals for the most expensive perfumes in the world also. And have for centuries. They've only started making their own. This Homage was established in 1982. Yeah.
So you think of our fragrance-free, you know, within the hospital system, completely fragrance-free, the office is completely fragrance-free.
No.
What do the people with allergies and so forth care?
Me? Because I have them?
Oh, okay, what did you do?
I used Claritin.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's, and that is something that would is just not even...
They trigger migraines, you know?
Yeah. They,
perfumes.
Yeah. We're going into their culture as opposed to thinking of it from our culture, and they wouldn't think of it that way. It's very ceremonial to them. It's used as a celebration. It's used to show wealth.
Really?
Because if you can wear this, you're wealthy.
Are they from more natural materials than some of our fragrances are just
made? Yes, that's why it's so expensive. It is 100% natural, and it's very difficult to harvest, and it comes also from a tree.
It might not trigger the same allergies if it's from a natural source as all the chemical fragrances.
It could be. I don't know. I think everyone. But again, I do think it goes back to that idea that it is cultural differences. Mm-hmm. And what you grow up with and how we view it versus how they view it. Which is going to bring me to the women part of this. And I just want to read a little, getting used to the new bifocals, a little something. Well, these women and the one man are powerheads in Oman of the Women's Association and the Women's Movement in Oman. And you can see that they don't all dress covered. And they don't, again, the black, you can see she's wearing her silver and such. He's basically their banker. And this is from Maureen Dowd in the New York Times. When I was in Saudi Arabia, I had tea and sweets with a group of educated and sophisticated young professional women. I asked why they were not more upset about living in a country where women's rights were strangled and inbred an aristocratic state like men's club, anyway, instead of more like a modern nation. They told me somewhat defensively that the kingdom was moving at its own pace, glacially as that seemed to outsiders. How could such spirited women, smart and successful on every other level, acquiesce in their own subordination? It was puzzling over and over to me. And I don't know if you know who Maureen Dowd is. Okay, she writes for the New York Times. She's very, very Catholic. As a Catholic woman, I was doing the same thing. I too belonged to an inbred and wealthy men's club, cloistered behind walls and disdaining modern dignity. I too remained part of an aristocratic society that repressed women and ignored their progress in the secular world. So, and it goes on. It goes on. She wrote this after a nun that had been running a hospital in Minnesota, or is it Missouri, where she'd been running the hospital for 30 years, and there was a woman that came in, and the hospital was Catholic, there was a woman that came in that needed an emergency, an emergency abortion, or she was going to die. And she granted that abortion, and the church removed her from the position. And this is in response to that. And I like that a lot because we too in our culture have glacial movement. And their culture is just beginning. Oman has only been developed for 40 years. They just celebrated the 40th anniversary. So everything you saw that's in that area that's been built has been done in the past 40 years. And with that, I would ask yourself, is it all good? Is what we bring to their culture something that we want to push as an American society? It certainly comes from Europe also. I love this picture. This is in a mall in Oman. That's Britney Spears, in case you don't recognize her. Harper's Bazaar, that is their Arab version, the Arab world. And we think of Saudi as very backwards. Saudi gets this stuff too. And there are very wealthy women in Saudi that also, the woman on the left, I don't think we think of hijabs. You were saying they all look the same, right? Mm-hmm. Some amazing fashion shows and some amazing designers that are taking over the world of design. And then using the culture, this is from Harper's Bazaar. This was a layout that was done in Oman. These two women are designers and fashion people in Oman. This is like they're setting up in an old Bedouin hut. And they're kind of showing day one, day two. The falcon, something that's very, these are real stereotypes that we put on the culture. Omanis don't do falconry. That's more others. But I also love the fact that they incorporate this into their world. They take our assumptions and incorporate it into this. She is a very famous Omani model that's used in Europe quite often. And again, And the tattoo.
Your tattoo.
That's based on henna, but I know for a fact that that one is a permanent tattoo. And then they do have their own designers. Can you read the name?
Slouch
Z.
Oh,
cool.
Oh, yeah.
I love that. Are you just, I mean, this is a very sexualized, empowered pose. And, you know, this one too, that kind of demure, mysterious. She's got a lot of silver going on there. This is in the back roads of Oman. And the very, not all wealthy, but the more educated, the more powerful, you go to parties, and they do dress like this. They do at these parties. They love heels. Big heels. And then we come over and we also do our own and use the stereotype of the land. So I think, and the Omani government would have had to okay this. It's a European layout, but it's not totally revealing, but I love the Omani guy and the Omani kids and the boys.
They're just as thin.
Well, she's a European model, but yes, they are just as thin.
The models.
The models, yeah, in general. This is an actual Omani magazine, women's magazine, published by Oman. This is the, what we would look at. I like how they put the title Shades of Women in there.
Is that Oprah?
There's Oprah.
Yeah.
There she is.
She is
Oprah. And it says that we will miss her, or miss that. But it's kind of a lot the same with the latest
makeup,
the latest car, the latest people, something about the environment around the area, some technology, and it's definitely very well received. I love this. Can you read that? How to live like an Omani princess. Girl's Guide to Living Fabulous in the Sultanate of Oman. And I'll just cap that there are actually three girls that do this blog, and it's a great blog. I'm addicted to this blog. I just
like
love
the way they
say
I wanna live.
Yeah, yeah, because they're interpreting. You know, they're going back and forth from their native language, and when they learn English, it's usually British English.
Oh, really?
Yeah. In the schools, it's almost always a Brit that's teaching them or somebody that's...
How long have you lived there?
4 years.
Four years.
But again, I think at this point, it's a good question to ask. How different is this from our own culture? Are we sending... Are we putting out there the good parts of our culture? What are we giving to the other people of the world? What are they taking from us? And if it is not something great, how can we change that? Because they really are driven by our media and our stereotypes. Even though we are very, very well received there, they often think that we look at them like we show them on our movies.
Hey, okay, Karen.
They often think that we are very close-minded about them. And at the same time, I reverse that on them and say, well, this is what you're presenting for us. But then they also take things that this is from Omani, Texas. Shati is a place where they hang out, and this is one of the girls' postings. And the girls asked her what white skin whitener she uses, and she was offended because she said, I'm Caucasian, God made me this way. I've always been this white. There are amazing amount. I actually have to watch when I go into the stores and make sure I'm not buying a product that has, that is whitening. I have to double read everything. She's definitely been whitened. She's been whitening herself. And they will often wrap even tighter if they've been whitening because they're just whitening their faces. Right? So you think of it, you know, it gets... and it is. It does reduce the pigment of your skin. It's very strong.
It's almost bleached.
It is bleached.
Is that cause exactly cancer? What it is. I mean, it sounds like something that might cause cancer.
I would imagine. I would imagine that it and then the wealthier women actually have laser treatments to remove the pigment.
So what would be? I would have thought they were so beautiful.
Is Arab Caucasian? Am I confused?
No, it was probably someone like me that lives in Oman.
So that's who this one happened.
That's the she's this this posting is probably from a girl that lives in Oman. That's probably an expat.
But the population is Arab.
Though the population is Arab.
Are they tribal? Yes. Is there different tribes? Is it all one tribe?
There used to be tribes until the Sultan took over, and that was one of his, he had two main goals originally. One was to educate everybody. And he made it mandatory for all men and women to be, receive an education from preschool to, through high school. And the other was to break down the tribes, because it was very tribal, because there was no way to get around. I mean, there were no roads. So you were very, these little fiefdoms everywhere. And often you would have to pass through one to get to another place.
Has that been successful? Because most places...
Very successful. It's just very successful.
And they teach that to other... Because,
at the end of this, I'm like, what can Oman teach us?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can they teach it to other places?
So we're doing the tanning booths. They're doing the whitening.
Isn't it great?
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it really is about a cultural difference. And it even says this. I think that's cute. I've never used a skin lightener a day in my life, but I tried really hard to get a tan once with fake tanner, and it turned me carrot orange. So, again, it's that, you know, the grass is always greener.
Yeah.
People are accepted for...
Oh, look at how white they are.
Okay, now this is... these are two very powerful women in the Arab world that... women in Oman and other places really look up to, and one of them is the Queen of Jordan, and the other, she's the one in the pink, is the Princess of Morocco, and they advocate women's rights a lot. They travel around and speak often about it, and they're in very obviously powerful positions in different places in the Arab world. And the girls especially, I love it that they really follow this and read and are educated. But in the same time, and you know, look how skinny she is.
Why she is there? It's obviously not just the face they're whitening.
Well, I think she's
a photographer.
I think part of it is about photography, but if you see other pictures of her, she is very white. I mean, she.
Look at her arms.
The assumption that all Arabs are very dark is not true. We're not that. We're just like we're not all one shade of white. You know, they're not all one shade of brown. Yes.
Am I thinking of someone else? But. One woman is from the U.S. She married the King of Jordan.
Yeah. Queen Noor.
Oh, that's Queen Noor.
Yeah, that was.
Maybe this is her daughter, for all I know.
Daughter-in-law.
Oh, okay.
This is something that we could Google and find out.
Mm-hmm. They often talk about Rania as the Jacqueline.
Yeah, she looks
like her. Yeah, they do.
How do you say the name?
Rania.
Rania.
And but she's someone that's very, very powerful, and that is trying to educate girls on another level. Thing that the Omani women are doing with their ability to be more free and open and equal are starting to run some campaigns that go out into the community. This is in that magazine that I was showing you. And again, this magazine goes all around and it says, talk to someone else, don't encourage domestic violence. And this is a campaign that they did on domestic violence, and that you can speak out, and that you are equal. And so this campaign ran, I think, a couple of years ago.
Wow.
There's another one.
Oh, now look at the white on her face compared to her back.
Yeah.
I think that's more photography. And one thing you have to remember in all of these photos in any magazine you ever pick up is that they've been photoshopped. They've been touched and retouched and touched again.
Yeah.
Her face, her face and her arms, it's very bright. They've lightened it so that it comes out at you.
Mm-hmm. It's what about her blonde
extreme.
Hair?
Her blonde hair, good, thank you. Lots of blondes that want to be blondes, lots of blondes that are kind of my color, and then go lighter. She's a model.
They do dye their hair.
They dye their hair. They dye it just like we do, extremely black, extremely light. And then there's another campaign that Oman is very behind that is about using rape and sexual violence as a property of war. And they're now up to 13 United Nations. One of them is Oman. And this is the website, and that's the symbol of trying to stop this. And then I think it's become popularized. I know, recognize a couple of the actresses up there, here, and here. Kim Basinger and Nicole Kidman. So there are women that are in the community that travel that do talks on these, that are employed by the Omani ministry, the Omani government. So I think they do a pretty good job of balancing both worlds of the beauty and that with things like this. This is a billboard on the street down the highway. You can see she's pretty high up in the National Bank of Oman. And this says an important development last year. I think this was in 2005. Omani women were granted equal rights to men, free government land, and equal testimony weight in court, according to the new evidence law, a new law to combat human trafficking affecting women disproportionately, and the rape things we're talking about is one of the reasons why this was enacted. So now in their government, women have the same equal rights in being able to testify in courts and testify in matters of law. So that's also something. They've had equal rights in employment and such. They can drive, they can do. And then there are, outside of Oman, the idea of feminism. It's something that I want to say right now, I am not an expert on, okay? In my master's, I did some study, and I'm just learning more and more about the connection between Islamic feminism and Islam and feminism and who the leaders are in this. It's very much on the young girls' minds, the girls that I teach that are from Egypt, Pakistan, Oman, Saudi, Kuwait, who else, had some girls from Lebanon, and they have brothers. But and they really are discussing this. Ziba Hosseini, she's, you can see here, she's an anthropologist. It's not her. It's just a juxtaposition of the old and the new, and a group of women that were doing kind of a protest, I guess, and going up to the women that are dressed more modern. And I don't know if you read that down there, but I think the majority of women that are writing and publishing about Islamic feminism are definitely the elite, the middle class. Globally, that is true, she's saying, about all of the women that are writing about feminism, that can embrace feminism.
Bottom line, to say that political Islam has created the backlash to create Islamic feminism, is that what it's saying? As a reaction to them becoming more strident over here, we're going to stand up for ourselves?
Anyone else want to help me on this?
Isn't it?
Yes. I would say yes. That's a personal interpretation. Okay. I'm looking back.
I'm just thinking, does that surprise you?
No, but it's an interesting thought because...
Yeah. Yeah,
that takes a lot of guts.
I know. Yeah, you can get stoned or something.
Well, yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I was even just picking. And this is up just outside our door here. The eyes through the eyes of women, their faith and courage, in the cornerstone, and it's about the Palestinian liberation and the women of the Palestinian liberation theology has always affirmed that God, we believe in, is the God who also loves us, created all as equal, both men and women. And there is no place in the Quran that says women are less. And so, but there is also the actual response to this, the response that not everybody, not all women want to be liberated. It's our form of liberation, our world of liberation. Isaiah, she's, like it says here, a very radical feminist. I don't know where she is right now. She's in isolation. She moves around a lot. She and her followers actually go around and do protests like, we'll take black paint and blacken out any of those ads that you saw that are on billboards and everywhere else. They also have been known to go and throw paint on women that are uncovered. And so, again, it's that extreme version that we create these extreme versions, but I don't think that's any different than Western feminism, where we criticize and put down and ostracize women that, especially in the second wave of feminism, that used their sexuality, wanted to be more overt in that way, and we kind of, well, then you're not a feminist, right? My husband calls me a feminist with a little F. I'm not the big F feminist. So, I struggle with this all the time. I can understand this. I can see why being covered gives you equality. Mm-hmm. It takes away all of that. Just as I think in the
it's
second
like
wave of feminism, we stripped a lot of that down and stripped a lot of that away also.
It's like going to parochial school in a uniform, like a uniform.
It is.
Yeah.
It makes everybody equal.
Equal.
It certainly does put everybody in a certain equality. This is what a radical Muslim feminist looks like. And I like this one just because it shows that a lot of the Arab men are behind this movement, and it is the younger. But they want their women to be empowered also. Mm-hmm. They look at their women as equal. And more as women are getting involved also in their Islamic theology and learning the Quran and becoming educated and becoming leaders within the faith itself. Women are still separate in the mosque. They still worship in their separate areas, but they are being allowed to be educated. They're being allowed to be leaders. And in other places in the world, they do run more and more in the culture of the mosques, which really makes me want to just talk about the Omani Islamic tradition. 75%, there are Sunnis and Shiites that you hear mostly about, but they are Ibadis. Ibadism is what it's called. And it's Abdallah ibn Ibad, who lived during the 17th century AD, is who this is, the founder of Ibadism. And their belief is that is one of tolerance, that you can believe within your faith what you want to believe, and that's okay, but that you should tolerate all faiths. And so it says they're not only tolerant of the beliefs of different Muslim divisions, they are also tolerant towards believers of faiths and allow them to practice in their religion, in their churches, in their temples. And last time I told this, that we do have Christian churches, we have a Roman Catholic church, there are Hindus, and they're all allowed. Actually, the Sultan gave them the land to develop their church compound. It's kind of theirs, the main one, and that has the three churches on it. And you'll see signs that says the church. And then there's another large one in another area that's mostly Indian for a lot of the Indian population. Question? No? Okay. So.
Could you just tell us a little bit more about yourself, about how you got there?
Oh, sure.
Is your husband
there?
I didn't. What does your daughter do?
Okay. I'm sorry. I've been there for 4 years. I am a high school teacher at the American International School of Muscat. We teach an American curriculum, and so we teach in English. Our students are usually from about 40 to 60 different nationalities.
Wow.
Americans are maybe 10-15% of that. My husband is there with me. He teaches English literature. My daughter, who is here with me at Holden, went to high school and did her junior and senior year there. And she's been in Boston for 2 years, and as of September 1st, she's coming up to Holden for 4 months. So, yay! it would be interesting if you get a chance to talk to Brittany. She will give you a very different perspective being a young teenager in this crowd and such, and being around the younger guys that are more modern. They tend to assume that we are like what they see on TV, which is not necessarily the greatest, example, shining example. So she said, if I smile at them, they think I want to go to bed with them. And that certainly is an extreme, but it is very interesting to listen to her dialogue and what. But she moved around in Muscat freely. We don't cover, you don't have to cover. Transportation, she took taxis everywhere. and she's safe. You know, they may harass her a little bit in that way, but there would never be a, you know, wouldn't have to worry about it ever being anything more than that. I feel safer as an as a woman in Oman walking down the street than I do pretty much anywhere else in the U.S. So it's just
because of the laws.
Because of their, I think because of their culture, it's just the. I know it's hard to believe when we see what we see on TV, but they're in the Muslim tradition and in Islam. I'm trying to get around offensive words like sexually assault and rape and that. That it goes so strongly against their culture and what is in their Islamic beliefs. The things that we see are part of jihad, which is a very different extremist belief. And then also what we see too is cultural, like the women that get doused with gasoline because they, you know, we see those kind of things. Those are from very old world traditions. And they might do that to someone within their family. They would never do that to someone outside of their family, which is a hard, and I use the word never in this kind of like what I know and understand, because it's just very, it goes very strongly against the Islamic practice and belief system. So, woo!
So abusing your family is okay, but abusing strangers is not okay.
I'm getting into areas that I don't know a whole lot about, except for, and I don't want to. I don't want to say it like I'm, you know, the authority on this. And I would think that I would encourage you very much to explore this. There's a lot of information out there. But generally, a woman that is that you see these stories about is because maybe they didn't marry the man they were supposed to marry, because they made a decision that went against culturally what they were supposed to do within the belief system of the family. So
so they're killed. Is that what you're saying?
Some of them are killed. I mean, it's, yes, you read about it, you see it on TV, but what I would encourage everyone to go further than that in educating yourself, because that is not all there is. And looking at why that is, and kind of going back to that idea of moving glacially, and think about what we did in our churches and what we did in our cultures to people in our families and to people within our faiths that were acting out or were not doing what they're supposed to be doing. There are direct connections to that. Help me. We have two theologists back here, so I'm trying to. Please, I'm not a theologist.
In the U.S.,
please.
They're just staggering. What is it, every 2 seconds, someone is, you know, beaten or killed? So, I mean, the deaths are happening here, and often justified by people. You know, she didn't do what she was supposed to do, or she said the wrong thing, or. And sometimes men will go to their priests, or the women will go to their priests and say, I'm being abused by my husband. And the priest will say, you're supposed to submit to your husband. It says right here in Scripture, you're supposed to be, you know, obedient to him. And so that's been a long history that we've had in the church.
Please.
Yeah.
Please.
Example, I've been working with a gentleman who repressed the memory of his father choosing him with a pitchfork. And we ended up breaking up the engagements.
most of the, well, I would say advances or whatever, come from the fact that the son came back.
Yes.
And made a decision, and he was a strong enough personality, or is it just that
yes.
that family has all the power one way
yes.
or the other?
No, it comes from the Sultan. It comes from this man.
So this one
and
person.
This one person
could change
and,
a whole nation.
Yes, and so So that is a good. You just look so dang regal there.
Yeah.
I'm not in any kind of circle where I would get invited to meet with him. I would love to, but he just is. So I'll yes.
I don't know if you can even answer this, but I'm just wondering what your sense is of hope for the future then for this area, like when he dies. And I'm thinking in Iran, the women have
yeah.
made similar strides and all, and then boom, just
right, the leaders. He has not married on purpose, and there are three names in sealed places. And the theory is that it's because he's starting to set the country up for democracy. So there is no straight apparent heir. And he has also started within his ministries and such, they have to vote for certain leaders of certain areas. So he slowly has been setting up the idea and getting the Omani people used to the idea of voting. And the theories are from a lot of the historians, and there's some that I've talked to, that is what he's trying to do and where he's trying to go. Certainly that, you know, you're I don't know. One of his closest advisors, they just found out and removed and put into exile because he was leaking information, Omani information, governmental, very high up information to places in Iran and Iraq. So that's certainly within any government.
Does he have a wife that's active?
No, he didn't. He's not married.
Oh, he's not.
Because if he was married, then he would have an heir.
No, he is. Oh, okay. So
he's not married. He is not married. He does have five palaces and drives around with a library with him all the time. So, he just is a very interesting man. And we're getting close. Yes.
Is he looked at with disdain by like Iran and Iraq?
Is he what?
Looked at with disdain by like Iran and Iraq?
No,
he's too progressive.
I mentioned this last time. Somehow, and I don't know how, no answer to this, it's a very strong question in my own mind, is how has he became and stayed so neutral? How has Oman been able to stay so neutral? And Oman was very neutral even when his father was in leadership, and before that also. One of the answers that the historians say is because of the trade route into the Strait of Hormuz. Everyone, you need to get in there to get and get out. And Oman basically runs that and owns that. They have stayed out of all of the wars. They have not gone into any of that. And how they've been managed to do that, I don't know.
Military service compulsory at all, or volunteer?
It's used to be that you had to do 2 years. Now it is more volunteer, and depends on. I think it's actually a lot like ours. The less educated, those that are not going to go on to university, tend to. And there are men and women, by the way. There are women police. There's a woman firemen. There are women in the military.
Since he came into power. Wow.
Yeah. So, this is, tell what newspaper I read. This is from the New York Times. This is Nicholas Kristof. I don't know if you're, okay, I'll bet. And I'll just, oh, I'm just going to put a different one quickly. Just let this,
magic. If not, we have someone back there. Okay. Oman can teach us. As the United States relies on firepower to try to crush extremism in Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Yemen, it might instead consider the lesson of the remarkable Arab country of Oman. Just 40 years ago, Oman was one of the most hidebound societies in the world. There was no television, radios were banned as the work of the devil. There was no Omani diplomats abroad, and the Sultan kept his country in almost complete isolation. Oman, a country about the size of Kansas, had just six miles of paved road, and the majority of the population was illiterate and fiercely tribal. The country had a measly 3 schools serving 909 pupils, all boys in primary grades. Not one girl in Oman was in school. Oman's capital city, Muscat, nestled among the rocks, hills, and the deserts, which you saw, the Arabian Peninsula, was surrounded by a traditional wall. At dusk, the authorities would fire a cannon and then close the city's gates for the night. Anyone seen walking outside without a torch at night was subject to being shot. Oman was historically similar to its neighbor Yemen, which now has become an incubator for Al-Qaeda affiliates terrorists. But in 1970, Oman left that feudalism track, and the Sultan's son disposed of his father. Sent him to the UK.
He sent him to the UK.
And started a stunning modernization built around education for boys and girls alike. Visit Oman today, and it is a contemporary country with highways, sleek new airports, satellite TV dishes everywhere. Oh my gosh. And a range of public and private sector universities. Children start education, English, computers in the first grade. Boys and girls alike are expected to finish high school at least. It's peaceful and pro-Western, without the widespread fundamentalism and terrorism that afflicts Yemen. Granted, Yemen may be the most beautiful country in the Arab world, and I agree with that. That's, wow. But much to my hunch is that most of the young Westerners studying Arabic there will end up relocating in Oman because of the tranquility. It is particularly striking how the role of women have been transformed. One 18-year-old university student I spoke to told me in fluent English of her interest in entrepreneurship. She also told me affectionately about her grandmother, who was illiterate, married at age 9, and bore 10 children.